The current display of the Turin Shroud and Pope Benedict's visit this month to view the cloth has shone the spotlight on the issue of relics within the church and the various misconceptions surrounding them. The official definition of a relic is an object or body part that is venerated because of its association with a saint or a martyr. Contrary to what many people believe, the Catholic Church does not claim that relics have magic powers, but instead sees them as a way to come closer to a person who was deemed holy and thus form a closer bond with God. But why do relics fascinate Catholics and non-Catholics alike? And is the veneration of relics a macabre and ghoulish superstition, as many modern Christians claim? Well, to find the answers to those questions and explore the long and sometimes controversial history of relics within the church, I spoke to Liz Lev, an expert on Christian art and archaeology at Duquesne University's Rome campus.
Well, relics are a little bit of contact between something of this world and something of another world. I mean, technically, a relic is something that belonged to a saint. It is frequently a body part, which is often more surprising to some of our Anglo-Saxon listeners, but it is also things like a piece of clothing, something that belonged to a saint. And this object that remains long after the saint dies, that object becomes a connection, a physical, tangible reminder of the person's existence and the person's actual presence in heaven.
It is true, isn't it, that particularly perhaps in Anglo-Saxon cultures, there is a tendency to view relics as a rather ghoulish superstition, something rather macabre about it.
I dare say those two adjectives sum up how many, many Anglo-Saxon visitors view this interest in a body part, a hand in the Jesu, a body lying underneath the altar in St. Peter's. It seems to be something of a ghoulish fascination. Whereas for many, many, many years, ever since the remains of Polycarp were gathered up in the first century AD, these relics, these remains of saints, have been a precious part of the church tradition.
And they certainly fascinate and pull in the crowds. In this spring, we've seen over 1 million people travel to Turin to view the Turin Shroud. And amongst those pilgrims was Pope Benedict himself, of course, who's just been there. What does all this say?
Well, I think it's very interesting that Benedict himself, Benedict is the owner of the shroud as of 1983, when the former king of Italy gave the shroud, bequeathed the shroud to John Paul II. So even though it was in the hands of another person for many, many years, now the shroud actually belongs to the Pope. And the Pope decides when the shroud will be put on display, and Benedict XVI decided that for this period, the shroud would be put out extraordinarily for people to see. So despite this very sophisticated world that thinks that we seem to have answers for everything, this interest in something that connects us to supernatural seems to be very, very present and on the surface of people today.
And when it comes to the shroud, of course, many Christians see it as the ultimate relic, the thing closest to Christ, really the gospel in pictures. What's your view?
Oh, in a certain sense, this is the first witness of the body of Christ laid in the tomb. I mean, it was there when Christ was laid lifeless, and it was there when Christ resurrected. And this object that brings us to the central mystery of the Christian faith, what a fascinating and exciting thing to be near.
And another sign of this continuing massive interest in relics were the huge crowds that turned out in England and Wales in late 2009, when the relics of St. Thérèse of Lisieux, the little flower, toured around the country. I mean, this is not Christ. This is a 19th century sister who lived in obscurity for most of her life. And yet,
she always dreamed of being a missionary. And so her dream was, she died with tuberculosis at the age of 24, and St. Thérèse dreamed of being a missionary and going out into the world. Indeed, she is the patron of missions, and she did do her great missionary tour. She went everywhere. She's been all over the world besides to England and to UK. And in England, I believe, almost 300,000 people came to all of these different parishes, following her from Plymouth all the way up to London,
and this
increasing in numbers. If you look at at the numbers. The numbers start out with a few thousand here, a few thousand here, then they move into the 10,000s. And it grows and grows and grows as she travels.
And this was extraordinary when you consider that England is a highly secularized country where Catholics are only a small minority.
Exactly. It's even more surprising thinking that Catholics are a very small proportion of the population. And this is one of the countries that we consider amongst Europe as the spearhead of secularization. And yet comes this little flower, someone who's not famous heroine in the sense of action and adventure, but this deeply prayerful soul who was in close and intimate contact with Christ. And she comes in these a few bones in a casket, and she finds people following her from one end of the country to the other.
Now, you talked earlier about her desire to be a missionary, to go to all ends of the earth. And I gather that on the subject of her relics even went up in space. Did you know that one of the American astronauts took some relics around in space?
My goodness, that sounds like even on a spaceship, there are like relics seem to be side by side with the great discoveries.
Yes, indeed. And another case involving relics in recent years, of course, was when there was this huge interest among the faithful to get threads from one of the cassocks of the late Pope John Paul.
Well, John Paul II, who we are, of course, waiting for the announcement of his beatification. So already there's kind of the early game for the relics. Everybody wants to have something that one day will be classified as something that connects us to John Paul II in heaven.
And let's move on now to Padre Pio, a saint and another figure whose relics prove a real crowd puller, don't they? Can you give us some examples there? There was one in Rome a few years back.
Yes, there was one in Rome, and the crowds and the chaos, they brought it to a relatively small parish in the north of Rome, and the entire road was blocked. They had no idea that this many people would turn out. It was a Saturday or a Sunday afternoon when the Romans usually take off to the beach, and instead they went crowding around for a relic of Padre Pio. I have a little teeny relic of Padre Pio myself in my house, which is...
What's that?
It's a bit of a cassock, and it's very... It's amazing. It's amazing how people are always so... Oh, piece of Padre Pio.
Yes, and I mean, everywhere you go, you find devotion to Padre Pio, don't you? I mean, he really is one of these figures that cuts across.
I find the devotion to Padre Pio is one of the most beautiful unifiers of Italy. You get into a taxi cab and there's Padre Pio up against the visor. You go into a pizza store and there above, over to the corner of the cash register. You go everywhere, and if you look around long enough, you'll see someone, the little image of Padre Pio watching over the Italians. It's a beautiful, wonderful way of linking this people together through the grace of a saint.
Coming to the history, I mean, the veneration of relics is a very ancient practice within the church. Roughly, when did it begin, or how and when was it first mentioned?
Well, in the New Testament in particular, it's the remains of the martyrs that are the first fixation of the church. So the fact that...
Was it St. Polycarp?
It's St. Polycarp.
Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, Polycarp was martyred in about 155. And his body, albeit burnt and very little remaining, those pieces were gathered up together. And as they say, that these remains of Polycarp were more important or more treasured than those of precious stones. So we begin with the idea of keeping the bodies of the martyrs. However, in Rome, the idea of the breaking up of the relics the way that we do, we have a bit of a foot traveling around of Teresa, if my recollection is correct. That was not done in Rome. In Rome, what we had were the graves of the martyrs. And so generally the idea would be to celebrate Mass on the tomb where a martyr was buried. The exception to this, of course, is St. Peter and St. Paul, who are believed to have been moved from their original resting places because of the persecution, attack, possible danger, moved to another spot and then moved back, or simply moved into the hiding place where Peter's bones were ultimately found. But generally the idea, and Gregory the Great says so, he doesn't want to disturb the sleep of the martyrs. And so it's not really until the 8th century when this spate of Greek popes begins the movement of relics.
Or the dismemberment of the bodies.
The dismemberment of the bodies, yes.
Yeah. And what about the fragmentation of the true cross? I mean, do we have any idea at all how many fragments there are scattered across the globe?
Well, the Bollandists started a project in the 17th century, and it was to weigh and to measure all the pieces of the true cross that they could find. Apparently, they aren't done yet. They're still working on it. But as yet, they haven't found enough to make up a single cross. The shards of the cross that are around are very, very small. And we do have a testimony that by 354, the cross had been found and fragmented already. And there's some testimonies to people who would wrap the wood of the cross in gold and wear it as necklaces. I mean, St. John Chrysostom tells us that he heard that by 354, the cross was already all over the empire.
Okay, coming to Rome, where do you consider the most fascinating collection of relics? Is it, in fact, in the Church of the Holy Cross in Jerusalem?
I think for pilgrims, the most meaningful relics in Rome are the relics of the Passion. They're so important. They're so...
Can you tell us exactly what they are?
They're so moving. You have these remains of elements of Christ's Passion. So you have a nail, two of the thorns from the crown of thorns. You have a piece of the true cross, of course. You have the headboard, and this is quite an important relic. It's the headboard that went over Christ's cross and believed to be authentic. Jesus of Nazareth, King of the Jews, written in three languages. And then apparently the crossboard of the cross of Dismas, which lies along the side. And of course, the relic of Thomas's finger, He Who Doubted, which is a very interesting thing to place in an arrangement of relics where people always ask, well, how do we know this? Is it real? Is it not real? So that's the great site for pilgrims to venerate relics. I believe even the pop star Madonna, not known for being overly interested in veneration of things Catholic, she herself went over there with her children not too long ago. However, the most famous collection of relics, however, was at St. John Lateran in what used to be in the Sancta Sanctorum. It was a collection of relics that was the personal collection of the Pope, and it was the greatest collection in the world. So important that it was written down in the 8th or 9th century in mosaic.
And what did it contain?
It had, besides the remains of St. Blaise and the various endless numbers of martyrs, but the relics collection still remains in St. John Lateran as pieces of the table of the Last Supper. We have the altar that Peter celebrated Mass on.
Now, when we come to relics, there's, of course, always, should we say, the downside, the trade in false relics we've had right through the ages. What are some of the most glaring and wacky examples that you can think of that?
Oh, I seem to remember one of my favorites was the darkness from one of the plagues of Egypt. It was an all-time favorite of mine. There's a rumor around Rome that you have the foreskin of Christ somewhere. People became very adventurous in dreaming up things that they could produce as relics, but this was a relic mania that took place.
And of course, one of the rules, isn't it, that a relic should not be sold.
Cannot be sold. Cannot be sold.
Yes.
As a matter of fact, when the Council of Trent reiterates this in 1563, they say that no filthy lucre should be attached to it. And so relics are not for sale. They're principally meant to be used in the consecration of a church. And this is from time immemorial. The use of a relic in the consecration of a church is, that's the proper place for it.
I was speaking to Liz Lev, an expert on Christian art and archaeology.